7. In orbit around Plowman's planet, the ship began firing its retro rockets, cutting its velocity. They would be landing in half an hour. Meanwhile, Joe Fernride amused himself in a mordant way by reading the Wall Street Journal. He had found over the years that this newspaper, out of all of them, contained the most chilling and the most recent oddities. Reading the journal was like taking a little trip into the future, 6 months or so. A new deep-depth rooming house in New Jersey, designed especially for geriatric persons, has built into it a novel circuit, designed to make the transfer of the room easy and without delay. When a roomer dies, electronic detectors in the wall register his lack of pulse and send swift circuits into action. The deceased is grappled by standard Waldos, drawn into the wall of the room, where on the spot, his remains are incinerated within an asbestos chamber, thus permitting the new tenant, also a geriatric case, to take possession by noon. He ceased reading, tossed down the newspaper. We must be better off out here, he decided, if that's what they've got planned for us back on Earth.
I verified our reservations, Molly said matter-of-factly. We all have rooms at the Olympia Hotel in the largest city on the planet. Diamond Head, it's called, because it's on a winding promenade that goes 50 miles out into Mare Nostrum.
What's Mare Nostrum? Joe asked.
Our ocean.
He showed the item in the journal to her, and then silently to the rest of the passengers. They all read it, and then they all looked at one another for sign of a reaction.
We made the right choice, Harper Baldwin said.
The others nodded.
That's good enough for me,
Baldwin said. He shook his head and scowled, disgust and anger contorting his face.
And we built such a society, he rasped.
Strong-armed members of the ship's crew manually unscrewed the hatch. Outside air eddied in, smelling odd and cold. It seemed to Joe that the ocean was close. He sensed it in the air. Shielding his eyes, he gazed out against a weak sun. He distinguished the outline of a reasonably modern-looking city, and past it, hills in a mixture of brown and gray. But the ocean is some there nearby, he said to himself. Molly is right. This is a planet dominated by an ocean. And it is in the ocean that we will find everything that matters.
Smiling with mechanical courtesy, the stewardesses escorted them to the open hatch and the flight of stairs which led down to the damp surface of the field. Joe Fernright took Molly by the arm and led her down. Neither of them spoke for a time. Molly seemed absorbed in herself, taking no notice of the other people or the spaceport buildings. Bad memories, Joe reflected. Maybe what happened to her happened here. And for me, he thought. Look what this is for me. The first interplanetary or inter-system flight in my life. This ground under me is not Earth. A very strange and important thing is happening to me. He smelled the air. Another world and another atmosphere. It feels strange, he decided.
Don't say, Molly said, that you find this place unearthly. Please, for my sake.
I don't get it, Joe said. It is unearthly. It's completely different.
Never mind,
Molly said.
A little game Ralph and I had a long time ago. Thing-isms, we called them. Let's see if I can remember some of them. He thought all of them up. The book business is hidebound. That's one. Plants are taking over the world sporadically. Let's see. The operator let me off the hook. I always liked that. It made me think of a giant hook. In fact, a whole giant phone. In 1945, the discovery of atomic energy electrified the world. Do you see?
She glanced at him.
You don't,
she said.
Never mind.
They're all true statements, Joe said. As far as I can make out, what's the game part?
The Senate inquiry into modern use of sidearms was muzzled. How do you like that one? I saw that in a newspaper. I think Ralph found the others in newspapers or heard them over TV. I think all they were real.
She added somberly,
Everything about Ralph was real. For the beginning. But then later, no.
A careful, brown, large creature resembling a rat approached Joe and Molly. It held what appeared to be an armload of books.
Spittles,
Molly said, pointing to the careful rat-like creature, and to a second one which had accosted Harper Baldwin.
One of the native life forms here. Unlike Glimmung, you will find... Let me see.
She counted on her fingers.
Spittles, wubs, werches, claques, trobes, and printers. Left over from the old days. All of them older species, when the fog things of antiquity passed away. It wants you to buy a book.
The spittle touched a tiny tape recorder mounted on its belt. The tape began to speak for the spittle.
Fully documented history of a fascinating world.
It said in English, and then evidently repeated this in a variety of other tongues. Anyhow, it had stopped speaking in English.
Buy it,
Molly said. Pardon? Joe said.
Buy its book.
You know this book? What book is it?
Molly said with rigorous patience.
There is only one book in this world.
By world? Joe said. You mean planet or in the larger sense?
On Plowman's planet.
Molly said,
there is just this one book.
Don't the people get tired of reading it?
It changes,
Molly said. She handed the spittle a dime, which it accepted gratefully. A copy of the book was passed to her, and she in turn passed it to Joe.
Examining it, Joe said,
it has no title and no author.
It is written,
Molly said, as they walked on toward the spaceport buildings.
By a group of creatures or entities, I don't the English know, that records everything that passes on Plowman's planet. Everything, great and small.
Then it's a newspaper.
Molly halted. She turned to face him, her eyes burning with exasperation.
It is recorded first,
she said, as steadily as she could manage.
The Collins spin this story, they enter it in the ever-changing book without a title, and it comes to about, finally.
Precognitive, Joe said.
That raises a question. Which is cause? Which is effect? The Collins wove in their altering, evolving script that the fog things would pass away. They did pass away. Did then the Collins make them pass away? The Spittles think so.
She added.
But the Spittles are very superstitious. They naturally believe that.
Joe opened the book at random. The text was not in English. He did not recognize the language or even the letters of its alphabet. But then, as he leafed through it, he came to a short section in English, embedded in the mass of alien-looking entries. The girl, Molly Yojez, is an expert at removing coral deposits from submerged artifacts. Other individuals brought from various systems throughout the galaxy include geologists, structural engineers, hydraulic engineers, seismologists. One specializes in underwater robot operations, and another, an archaeologist, is a master at locating buried ancient cities. A peculiar, many-armed bivalve lives in a tank of salt water and functions well in supervising the raising of sunken ships for salvage purposes. A gastropod, capable of... At that point, the text lapsed into another language. He shut the book, pondered.
Maybe I'm mentioned in here somewhere,
he said, as they reached the moving sidewalk leading to the concourse sections of the spaceport terminal building complex.
Of course,
Molly said calmly.
If you long look enough, you will find it. How will you make it... Pardon. How will it make you feel?
Eerie, he said. Still pondering.
A surface car, acting as a taxi, transported them to their hotel. Joe Fernride, on the short trip, continued to examine the untitled book. It preoccupied him, preempting the colorful shops which the taxi passed, and the several life forms bustling about here and there. He was aware of the city street, its people and buildings, but only dimly, because he had already found another passage in English.
Obviously, the undertaking involves the locating of and the raising and repair of an underwater structure. Probably, due to the number of engineers involved, of great magnitude. Almost certainly an entire city, or even an entire civilization. Very likely of some remote past age.
And then once again the text lapsed into a foreign script resembling dots and dashes, a sort of binary system of annotation. Joe said to the girl beside him in the taxi,
"The people who are writing this book know about the raising of Heltskala."
"Yes,"
Molly said shortly.
"But where's the precognition?" Joe demanded. "This is remarkably up to date. Right up to this minute, give or take an hour, but that's all."
"You will find it," Molly said. "When you have looked a long time, it is buried among the different texts, which are all translations of one primary text, one line like a thread. The thread of the past entering the present, then entering the future. Somewhere in that book, Mr. Fernwright, the future of Heltskala is written. The future of Glimmung. The future of us. We are all woven in by the yarn of the Kallen's time. Their time outside of time."
Joe said, "And you already knew about this book, before the Spittle sold it to you."
"I saw it before when Ralph and I were here. The SSA machine extrapolated we'd be joyous, and the Kallen's book, this book, said Ralph would..."
She paused.
"He killed himself. First he tried to kill me, but he wasn't able to."
"And the Kallen's book said that?"
"Yes, exactly that. I remember it, Ralph and I reading in the text about ourselves and not believing. Still under the idea that the SSA mechanism was scientific data analysis, and this book was tale by old wife, a lot of old wives, seeing doom when we and the SSA machine saw happyhood."
"Why did the SSA machine miss?"
"It missed because it didn't have one datum. Whitney's syndrome. A psychotic reaction to amphetamines by Ralph. Paranoia and murderous hostility. He thought himself overweight. He took them as..."
She hunted for the word. "Appetite suppressants," Joe said. "Like alcohol. Good for some people," he thought. "Lethal for others. And Whitney's syndrome didn't require overdoses. Even a small amount triggered it off. If the latent illness was already there. Just as for an alcoholic, the smallest drink meant defeat and bitter, utter, final destruction."
"Too bad," he murmured.
The taxi pulled up to the curb. Its driver, a beaver-like creature with wicked cutting teeth, said several words in a language which Joe did not understand. Molly, however, nodded and gave the beaverish individual a sum of metal money from her purse, and then she and Joe stepped from the taxi onto the sidewalk. Joe, looking around him, said,
"It's like going back 150 years.
Surface cars. Carbon arc lighting. This could be Earth in the days of President Franklin Roosevelt, he thought to himself, both enticed and amused. He liked it. The pace, he realized. It's slower. And the density of population. Relatively few organisms propelled themselves up and down the street, either on foot, or a reasonable substitute, or in cars.
You can see why I got angry at you,"
Molly said, catching his reaction.
"For your defaming Plowman's Planet, my home for 6 years. And now,"
she gestured,
"I'm back, and doing again what I did then, believing faith in a SSA mechanism."
"Let's go inside the hotel," Joe said, "and have a drink." Together they passed through the revolving door, into the Olympia Hotel, with its wooden floors, carved hardwood decorations, polished brass doorknobs and railings, and thick red carpet. And its antique elevator, which Joe had already caught sight of. Non-automatic, he discovered. The elevator required an attendant. In his hotel room, with its dresser, splotched mirror, iron bed and canvas window shade elegance, Joe Fernwright sat on an overstuffed faded chair and studied the book. Not long ago he had been preoccupied with the game,
and now the book. But this consisted of something quite different, and the more he read of the book, the more he realized it. Gradually, as he nosed among its pages, he began to assemble in his mind the totality of the English text. He had begun to put the separate bits in superimposition over one another.
"I'm going to take a bath,"
Molly said. She had already opened her suitcase and had laid most of her clothes out on the bed in her room.
"Isn't it strange, Joe Fernwright,"
she called,
"that we have to keep two rooms, like a century ago?"
"Yes," he said. She entered the room, wearing only her tight pants. Bare from the waist up, he saw. Small-breasted, but dense and tall with fine muscle tone. The body of a dancer, he said to himself. Or a Cro-Magnon female. A hunter. An astute, supple person accustomed to long, lean, even fruitless marches. There was not a gram of useless flesh on her, as he had already discovered in the locked lounge of the ship. He had clutched it then. Now he saw it. However, he thought morbidly, Kate had, actually still has, as good a figure. That made him depressed. He returned to reading the book.
"Would you have wanted to go to sleep with me?" Molly said. "If I were a cyclops?"
She pointed to a spot above her nose.
"One eye there. Polyphemus, the cyclops in the Odyssey. They put his one eye out with a burning stick, I think."
Joe said, "Listen to this." He read aloud from the book. "The current dominant species on the planet consists of what is called a glimmung. This shadowy, enormous entity is not native to the planet. It migrated here several centuries ago, taking over from the weak species left over when the once ruling master species, the so-called fog things of antiquity, vanished." Joe waved her to come and look. "Glimmung's power, however, is sharply curtailed by a mysterious book, in which it is alleged everything which has been, is, and will be is recorded." He snapped the book shut. "It's talking about itself." Coming over to his chair, Molly bent to read the text.
"Let me see what else it says,"
she said. And that's all. The English part ended there. Taking the book from him, Molly began to glance through it. She had begun to frown. Her face was tense and stern.
"Well, here you are, Joe,"
she said at last.
"As I told, you're in here by name."
He took the book from her and read rapidly. "Joseph Fernwright learns that Glimmung considers the Collins and their book his antagonist, and is said to be plotting to undermine the Collins once and for all. How he will do this, though, is not known. Here the rumors begin to differ."
"Let me turn the pages,"
Molly said. She examined the subsequent pages, and then, her face darkening, paused.
"In my language,"
she said. For a long, long time she studied the passage, and as she read and reread it, her expression became more intense, shadowed by her own intense urgency into starkness.
"It says,"
she said at last,
"that Glimmung's undertaking is the raising of the Cathedral Hellscholar to dry land once more, and that he will fail."
"Is there more?" Joe said. He had a feeling there was. Her face showed it. Molly said,
"It says that most of those recruited to help Glimmung will be destroyed when the undertaking fails."
She corrected herself.
Tujik, damaged, or made to unexist. Maimed, that's it. They will be permanently altered, beyond immediate repair."
"Do you think Glimmung knows about these passages?" Joe said. "That he'll fail and will be..."
"Of course he knows. It's there in the text, in that section you read. Glimmung considers the Collins and their book his antagonist, and plots to undermine them. And he's raising Hellscholar to undermine them."
"It didn't say that," Joe said. "It reads, how he will do this, though, is not known. Here the rumors begin to differ."
"But obviously it's the raising of Hellscholar."
She paced about the room in agitation, her hands clasped tightly together.
You said it yourself. The people who are writing this book know about the raising of Heldskalla. All you have to do is put the two passages together. I told you it was all there. Our future, Heldskalla's, Glimmong's. And ours is to unexist, to die.
She halted, stared at him frantically.
That's the way the fog things perished. They challenged the Book of the Cullens. As the Spittles can tell you, the Spittles are still chattering about it.
Joe said, We'd better tell the rest of the people here at the hotel about it. A knock sounded on the door. It opened, and Harper Baldwin peered apologetically into the room.
I'm sorry to bother the two of you, he rumbled. But we've been reading this book.
He held up his copy of the Book of the Cullens.
There's stuff in it about all of us. I'm having the hotel management notify all its guests to meet in the main conference room in half an hour.
We'll be there, Joe said. And beside him, Molly Yojez nodded, her partially disclosed body rigid with concern.